they controlled it. But where is it mentioned in Chumash?
The Kohen.
It's referred to as Shalem. The Malkitzedek Melech Shalem. You find in America there's a city called Salem.
In every state.
In Massachusetts.
Where is it?
In every state they have Salem.
Every state have a Salem?
Yes.
It's in Massachusetts.
Well, there's a Salem, Massachusetts, but every state has a Salem.
Who knows the origin of the word Salem?
Yerusha.
Salem.
Salem.
So why isn't it Shalem?
Where is it? Sabbath or Shalem? I don't know.
Well, they should not reckon. Why is it called Jerusalem? It should be called Yerushalem.
Ir Shalem.
Yeah, but why is it? Why in the world it's known as Jerusalem with an S? Because in Hebrew it's a sheen. Sheen is SH, not S.
That could be a sheen.
Connected with the second question. Why is it called Salem? It shouldn't be called. Or Jerusalem. Why is it called Jerusalem? Shouldn't it be called Jerusalem? Because in the Tanakh it's Jerusalem. Or is it? So it's like this. I'm going to go into more deeply. We do find many references and traditions to the city known as Shalem. So first of all, to start with the cobwebs from the transliteration. So this is based on the Greek alphabet. The Bible became known to other nations primarily through the Septuagint. One of the successors, Alexander the Great, who knew things about the Bible, it was Ptolemy. One of the Ptolemies, he built up Alexandria, the name of Alexander the Great, and he built there the biggest library in the world of his time. And he also commissioned Septuagint 70 scholars, Hebrew scholars, to go and write a Greek translation. That's enough. And that Greek translation, in fact, the oldest manuscripts we have of the Tanakh are the Greek translation. It's not the original Tanakh, it's the translation. So in Greek, of those times, there wasn't such a thing as a letter for Sheen. The sheen, therefore, in Greek is pronounced S.
Sigma.
Huh?
Sigma.
Sigma. And that's why all the letters of sheen in the Chumash are transliterated with an S. In Greek, and afterwards in Latin, and then in English. Hence the term Jerusalem, instead of Yerushalayim. But like this, there are five instances of the over 500 times that Yerushalayim is mentioned in the other books of the Nach. It's not mentioned in Chumash. So there, the way in which it's written is with the Yud. In other words, the way you have to say it and read it, it's Yerushalayim, because with his Yud there, it means it's a Yerushalayim. But in all the other instances, the vast majority, it's written without a Yud, and nevertheless it's pronounced Yerushalayim. It's what we call a permanent kriya kativ. The way in which it's read and the way it's written is different. So the way in which it's written is Yud, Reish, Vav, Lamed, Mem. But the way we pronounce it is Yerushalayim. And therefore in all our Hebrew prayers and all the Hebrew usage of the name of this great city, we always pronounce it Yerushalayim. Although it's written Yerushalem. So let's try to understand why is this. So if you go into it more deeply, it's really all hinted at in the Tanakh, in the Chumash also. The Chumash refers to the Mishkanim. Even in our first reading from yesterday's Parsha, where it says, Hashem says in yesterday's Parsha, in the Klala, it says, Vashimoti et Mishkanai, et Mikdushai. I'm going to make my holy places desolate. Even when it says at the beginning of the Parsha, b'tocham, so Mishkan means if you fulfill the whole Torah, I'm going to put my Mishkan in your midst. So in general, Mishkan means, in many passages, Shachen is a neighbor, the divine presence, which is our neighbor. That is the concept that really Hashem, He wants to bring His presence to be our nearest neighbor. And it, in a way, He is our nearest neighbor. He's certainly the nearest neighbor to the Neshama. Because it says in the first passage of the Chumash that Hashem breathed into man Nishmat Chayim, the breath of life, Vatib and Vahib Adam Nefesh Chaya, that became the living soul in the human being. All human beings possess the living soul. And therefore, Hashem's presence, which works through the soul, because if the soul is transparent, then people can see Hashem through the windows of the soul. Today it's happening. How do people today see Hashem? Through the near-death experience, when the soul becomes transparent, not being blocked by the body. And the soul continues to exist. And therefore the soul meets with God. And all the millions of records that all have near-death experiences, they all have a meeting with God. When they come back, then they interpret it in accordance with the hints they've received from their education environment, who is God. So the different, because when you come back into the body, someone re-enters the body, then all the influences of the body are at work. And the influences of the body are influenced by the environment. So there's some for whom it still means, unfortunately, a human being, the Son of God. So they say they've met the Son of God. They even saw Him. That's their reinterpretation, because that's how, when the soul becomes again attached to the body, they go back to their previous understanding. But those amongst human beings, who even if they were complete secularists, but they heard about the pure spiritual God, they find Him. There's so many records of this, already worked out by Moody, you popularized them. But today the strongest popularization is not only those who, many brain specialists have also referred to it. There's one great professor of brain neurology, also became a surgeon, situations of severe brain illnesses, and he was a complete atheist, and he himself had near-death experience, and changed him. He comes out with a book, Proof from Heaven. This proof, he tried to reject it, but he couldn't. He could find no explanation what happened to him, because he met with God in heaven. The same applies to a most extreme, very quite famous, some call infamous, philosopher of logical positivism. Some say was the biggest one in recent times. He wrote many books on it. And he regarded all religion as an illusion and the soul as an illusion. But when he himself had a near-death experience, he recanted from all this. He said, the soul exists, can't deny it. He also met with what he understood as God. So here on this earth, therefore Hashem referred to as the Shekhinah. He's here on earth as well, if you purify your soul. And that's the purpose of the people of Israel, to spread the Shekhinah, the power of the Shekhinah, in this world. Although Hashem said, if you look carefully at the Chumash, when straight after the revelation of the Aseret HaDibrot, he said, "B'chol makom asher azkir et shemi," wherever any of you emphasize my name and my reality, I'll come and bless you. So it applies to every person all over the world. But then when you saw that even Israel, who had chosen to do this, were not on that level, and maybe to start with, it was part of the plan. So therefore he said, you'll have a special place where the Shekhinah is stronger than anywhere else in the world. And when it says at the beginning of yesterday's parsha, "Venatati mishkani b'tocham," it means I'm going to be my Shekhinah in the midst of the people. But it's mentioned the parsha that deals with the blessing of the land. That means the Shekhinah is apparent in Eretz Israel more than anywhere else in the world. And that comes through the people of Israel. And if you follow, then I'll bring my Shekhinah in your midst, and the most concentrated place of the Shekhinah is Yerushalayim, and that is referred to in the Chumash, not by that name, but HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem Lishaken Et Shemo Shama, the place which Hashem will choose to have his presence dwelling in that place. That's what's referred to in Sefer Devarim many times. And so everybody asks, why does Hashem say it explicitly? He already mentioned Har Moriah, is already mentioned. Where the Har Moriah mentioned first? By the Akedah. Yet explicitly it said, Har Moriah means the place where Hashem is the teacher. From the teaching Hashem goes out, Moriah is a teacher. You want to know about God, it's on that mountain. From that mountain you can learn about God. That's how it's referred to there. But it's not referred to with the full name Yerushalayim. But if you want to understand the name Yerushalayim, that is the event where it becomes clear. Because we know Hashem wanted Shekhinah to dwell everywhere. But he found that mankind was not ready to open up to the Shekhinah, the divine presence. They blocked it through the sins of the deluge and the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah. All this was a blockage of the divine power in the world. So that's why when Avram chose him, so Hashem chose Avram. And when later the people, they chose Hashem, and said Nasir al-Ishma, he chose the people. As the anti-Semitic poet said, how odd of God to choose the Jews. And unfortunately, there are plenty of anti-Semites who join in that choir, how odd of God. But the Jewish wit responded to it, it's not so odd. The Jews chose God. And the first one to choose God was Avraham Avinu. So let's turn, I was going to turn first of all, in Bereshit, we have reference to Malki Tzedek Melech Shalem. Malki Tzedek was who? Who was the first Malki Tzedek? Possibly there were a few Malki Tzedek. I mean, the king of righteousness. Because in the Malki Tzedek, his place of teaching was the Hilton Yerushalayim. That's where he had his place. And that's referred to already in the blessing which Abraham gave, which Noah gave to his three sons. And he said, Yavte Elohim Yevet, Yishkan Ole Hashem. Hashem, Yishkan, this is the Mishkan. Hashem places his presence in the tent of Shem, who is the son of Noah. And the real one who passed on the traditions of the Noahide code to the rest of mankind was Shem. And he made the yeshiva. Shem and his son Eber continued it. And that's where the teachings of the Noahide code also came ultimately to Abraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov. So, but then the place was known as Sholem. And you can explain, why was he called Shem? Shem means giving things their correct purpose. That means the correct name means the correct purpose. And Noah saw that his son Shem was the one who took the Noahide code most seriously. And he understood that was the purpose of mankind, to preserve the Shekhinah through the Noahide code. And the Noahide code is the basis for morality for all mankind. And if you study more thoroughly, you will see that although the general principles of the Noahide code are quite widely known, but we should know it's much more than meets the external eye. Because if you go into it thoroughly, the day that someone's produced the Divine Code, also in English, where it goes into all the details of the Noahide code, demonstrates it's a whole pattern of many different details of mitzvah. The concept of seven is again because seven represents harmony and the power of the Shekhinah in the world. But then it was called Sholem, because this was the way what Sholem means, perfection. Human beings are sometimes perfectionists. Now, in the American language, generally speaking, perfectionism is regarded as a blemish. Why? Because people say everything's got to be perfect. You come into rooms, if it's untidy, they get very upset. Or if in their lives things don't turn 100%, they go into depression. That's the negative aspect of perfectionism. But the positive aspect of striving for perfection, in the moral sense, to try to reach saintliness. But part of it is also not to fall into depression if you can't reach it. In other words, the essence of life is that a person should do his maximum. You try to do more than his maximum, you'll fall right down. This is the concept of the ladder, which we're going through now. You climb up a ladder. You have to go step by step. When a person is very ambitious, he jumps. But then, if he takes a jump a few rounds at a time, the risk of falling is enormous. Same applies with good monks and hearing. Little step by step. But if you try to go too far, too high, beyond your potential, then you just fall flat. And that happens to many people who are perfectionists in whatever area of life. Because they're going too far. But in the moral area, that's the concept of the mitzvot b'nei Noach, and of the mitzvot given to us, step by step, bit by bit. If you do what you can, as the Shet says in the Chumash, lo tosef alav, lo tigra mimenu. Don't do more, and don't do less. Keep the right balance. It's very important also in our life in the yeshiva. You know, there are many who go back to learn till the early hours of the morning, and then the next day, they miss tefillah. They miss tefillah at Sibor. Little I think we mentioned something, by the way. Because people seem to think that you've got to make up a minyan. Yeah? In fact, in the yeshiva, we have to use all sorts of extreme methods, unfortunately, to get people to make up the minyan. But they like to stay in bed. Even some were very frum. I don't know what happens, perhaps they go to bed too late. I mean, pick it up in the middle of the night. So it's, you have to keep right balance. So in all things, you have to work step by step. Let me explain. The Indian of tefillah, which the Chachom introduced, is that you don't fulfill the real mitzvah tefillah unless you daven with the minyan. The tefillah berachah is like this. The spiritual energy which comes when a person prays, and when there's a minyan of praise, the spiritual inyan for each person is multiplied. And you that are missing out, and people sometimes think, oh, I'll come late, and then I'll stay on for davening. I'll do my davening. See, some students, they go on davening afterwards with great fervor. But you miss the minyan. You've got to learn in Shiva. Those when they start, you don't mind what they do. They just learn to feel at home. But once they've been already in yeshivas for a couple of years, and they most times come very late, and then they carry on davening afterwards, but you've missed your minyan. You didn't miss davening with a minyan. And, you know, when the Shliach Tzibur waits for people to stand up, there shouldn't be a break. The people at davening have got to hurry up. If you've got to jump over the dinners, if you come a bit late, then you don't say the Pesuk of Zimra. You do Tilugim. I'm not going to teach the Tilugim now. To learn them in the basic shir of halachas. But you're supposed to jump to be able to get the minyan in time for yourself. So you have a minyan. So this by the side. Because that's also part of the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah comes when there is a Kiddush Hashem of 10 people who all of them togetherness with the tzibur to get rid of your self-centeredness. So with even tefillah you must be self-centered. Even more so, because in tefillah you've got to feel humble for Hashem. If you're self-centered, say, you know, Hashem will answer me. He'll answer you. He'll answer you more than zchut that you are helping the tzibur to become spiritually elevated. Anyway, that's Nefati Mishkan Yibetolachem. So that's the Mishkan. So first the place was about Sholem. Now let's go to the Parsha of the Akedah, which is the first mention of Yerushalayim, as I'll show you, and explains the term Yerushalayim in a deeper level. So it says, if you've got the page, announce it. It's chapter 22, page 22. That is the final test of Abraham. You all know about. So there it says, verse 2, Lech Lecha, El Eretz Hamoriah. The Lech Lecha at the beginning is to go into Eretz Canaan, land of Canaan. That's one level of coming nearer to the essence of Abraham and his descendants. And then the final test is go to the land of Moriah. And there, bring up your son as an Ola. So it says at the end that when all this had happened, the Akedah, which I assume you all know, if you turn on that page to verse 14, it says, Vayikra Abraham Shem Avopamahu Hashem Yireh. And Hashem called out the name of that place, Hashem sees. Hashem Ayom, where we say today, Bahar Hashem Yireh. Hashem appears on the mountain of Hashem. And this is again referred to when it says later in the Chumash, three times a year, you should go to the place where Hashem shows himself. It says, Yeroeh kol zechocho et pnei Hashem Elokecha b'makom asher yivchar. Every male should appear in that place, in the place that Hashem will choose. So the reference
to bring in the offerings on the pilgrim festival, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, is referred to also with the concept of Har Hashem Yira'eh, where they meet with Hashem. So, now the Midrash enters into this and says, that place mentioned here is referred to previously as Sholem. Yeah? The name given really by Noach and Shem. Shem said Yishkon Bo'olei Shem. And that was the king of Sholem. But when Abraham had this experience of this revelation from Hashem, he gave it the name Yireh, that that's the place where Hashem will be seen, and also where he sees you. In other words, the meeting place between man and God is that holy mountain. And it says a bit further on, that because of what Avraham did to reach this high level, says, "Virash sareit eshar oyevav." Your seed, Avraham, will inherit the gate of the enemies. And we know, principle, when it says oyev, it says sone, oyev a specific reference to those descendants of Ishmael who tried to get hold of this gate. This is the gate of heaven. That's what Yaakov Avinu refers to it later on. And unfortunately, there might come a time, this is a hint here, when it'll be taken over by Oive Am Yisrael, which are the Muslims. But because of this covenant with Abraham, Hashem says, your seed, they'll take into possession. And when it says you think that that's going to bring the people to isolation, on the contrary, the Baruch of Zaracha immediately says through your seed will rest, call Goy Haret. All the nations are waiting to receive the blessing when the people of Israel are given back that mountain. I'm now expounding this verse in accordance to what the prophets say. And what's even this prophecy has been put on the wall of the United Nations building. What says there, there'll come a time when all nations of the world will say, we'll go to that mountain, and the seed of Abraham, they'll teach us the ways of God. That's what's going to happen. So the Midrash said it like this. Hashem said, what are we going to really call this name of this place? Shall we call it Sholem? Because of the Yeshiva of Shem Be'evet, with the Noahai code, which seeks, you can call it, moral improvement, even perfection, to bring mankind to social perfection, is in man and man, which is the emphasis of the Noahai code. And if the Noahai would be kept internationally, it can bring peace. And the basis of international relations and the United Nations Charter comes, in fact, from analysis of the Noahide Code. So that's Sholem. But it doesn't strengthen the basis of everything, which is the link with Hashem, not just faith, but where mankind feels the Shekhinah, you feel the Divine Presence on this earth, which is mentioned in the beginning of yesterday's parsha, and which can ultimately spread to all human beings. So he said, that's the dimension introduced by Abraham. And that is the source for the name Yerushalayim. Because Hashem said, if I will go carry to carry, just call it Shalem, I'm not fair to Abraham Avinu. If I will call it Yireh, which means all in front of Hashem, and witnessing the existence of God on earth, I'm not fair to Noach and Shem, and the Shiva of Shem Be'eva. And therefore this place is going to combine the two. Yerushalayim combines the two pillars, the pillar Ben Adam L'Chaviro and the pillar of Ben Adam L'Makom. It's shown also in the division of the Ten Commandments given later, the Aseret HaDibrot, because you find the first Luach, each verse is Hashem Elokecha. It's all a connection with the absolute God. The second part, the second Luach, doesn't mention God at all. It's to create a society. Murder, adultery, incest, theft, and lying, telling falsehood, and not even coveting. That's the way people must use their lives, to constantly feel unhappy because they haven't got what the next one has. But they learn that each one's got his portion, don't covet somebody else. And certainly don't go and tell lies to others because you want to get hold of his business or his things that he has. Don't steal from them. Don't murder them. This is society. And they didn't mention the name of God. Because these are the two things, the two luchot always mentioned, shnei luchot abrit, and generally speaking, it does not have a vav between the chet and the tav. They're really one. And that's the essence of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim has a double aspect to it. It's called the Irat Tzedek. It's got to be the city where there's the highest level of righteousness and justice. It's also the city of Hashem. Even the name in Yechezkel, but Yerushalayim in the Tanakh has 70 names. I can't get to all of them today. But 7 different names. But one of them given by Yechezkel is the name of Yerushalayim is Hashem. Hashem Shomo was the place of God. And the truth is, we see so much today of partial fulfillment of this. I mean, to go to the Kotel, it's enormous inspiration. And really, you can get inspiration anew again and again. When you see people who seem to have, in their own lives, as we know, no connection with the God of Israel. Many of them Jews, also had no connection. I've spoken quite often to people on their way to the Kotel, especially after I speak to people who don't look religious in any way, and ask them what brings you here. I've had, I'm sure you can all have it. Start talking to them. Well, you know, I come from Hashem HaTzeh Kibbutz, where they never mention the name of God. But I tell you here, when I come here or here, I feel the existence of God. And many people go up to put on tefillin, although they don't know what it is. But they see it. And then the number of non-Jewish groups that come to pray here and see the intensity of their prayer, you can see it. It's a fulfillment, what it says, all the prophets. And the greatness of Yerushalayim is, it's really, it's a kri and kativ, which is constant. It's Yerushalayim, because just like the luchot aluchat, the luchat, one luach, strengthen attachment, because if you try to build up society on the basis of the second luach and separate it from the first luach, it has no stability. You can do it for a little time, but unless you make the contact with God in the end, it just collapses, as happened with communism. With the Marines of communism, they rejected God. And as a result, we know communism was and is today the most anti-social society. Because in the society, when it existed in Russia, it was used to murder millions of people. Stalin, I think, has a record 20 million. They murdered people, and there were always some more equal to others. Those who were the organizers of the communism, they're given freedom, they're given wealth, they're given everything. And the ordinary people were left to starve. And what's happening today in China, communist China, that's the place, one of the merchant, give one example of a terrible situation, where all sorts of political prisoners, and they use them for work, and then they use them to go and sell the even stuff. They sell their organs all over the world for organ transplants. They kill them early, kill them when they want to. That's what they do. Otherwise, they really, you know, they're just murderers. And the people at the top, oh, they've got everything. But that is when you have a communism, a socialism. But the Torah emphasizes you've got to develop a nation of chesed. How do you do it? It's the whole concept. Shemitah and Yovel, with all our religious concept, they should govern the limitation of capitalism. Because in social business life, you have also to use all your means in order for the national wealth, but you could do it in such a way that there's constant prior concern of all the haves to give to the have-nots, and it's not a question of it being just loving kindness. Tzedakah comes through tzedek, righteousness. Chesed is to go beyond, to give what you're not obligated to do. But tzedakah means an obligation. To give to tzedakah up to a tenth is an absolute obligation. And also to give when a person asks you something, an obligation, is tzedakah. So Yerushalayim is the social code of the Noachites, that's the Sholim, combined with the religious dimension of the Beit HaMikdash. And that's the combination of the two. You say when, also, as it is by the two Luchot, it says when Moshe Rabbeinu, he saw the people dancing around the golden calf, there's also a fricative. It's Vayishleich Miyado et HaLuchot. That is the way it's written. He threw a ruach from his hand because the people, they had a good time together. They were worshipping the idol. So the ruach that says you mustn't have any idols, it says the letters flew in the air and the weight was too heavy, so he broke, well, but it doesn't say it broke, he threw it from his hand. He said, they're trampling the relationship with Hashem underfoot, having an idol, so I threw it down. But the other one he left, because they didn't steal from one another, they didn't murder one another. So after a few minutes though, he threw down the other one as well. Because if there's going to be no obedience to the commandment of Hashem, and no development of the feeling, of the connection of the human soul with Hashem, then the social level will also become corrupt. So it became corrupt and he dropped the other ruach. So on this day, in any case, I just want to bring you here the fantastic words of the Rambam about the Kedusha of Yerushalayim, which also has its halachic aspect. It says like this. There's a discussion in the Gemara where the holiness of the land of Israel, which was established under the conquerors of Yeshua, what happened to it? When they all went into exile, no Jews left, no temple left, then that holiness disappeared. And then came the second sanctification under Ezra and Nehemiah, and when Titus came and destroyed temple, banish all Jews from this land, then this question, did it remain or not? So that's a question. But the Rambam says this all applies to the land of Israel. But I say the Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim, the first holiness which was made when it was built by Shlomo HaMelech, David HaMelech built by him. The first time the Kedusha came, it never went away. And the Kedusha remains for the future. The rest of Eretz Israel we say the Rambam paskens only the second kedusha and not the first one. What's the difference? For the first kedusha, in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, when he built the Beit HaMikdash, the borders of this land, they went down to Eilat. Some even say it included a bit of Sinai, and went right in the north, certainly the whole of the West Bank. All this was sanctified, but when they were all banished, it disappeared. The second Beit HaMikdash, a much lesser area was covered. And that has all to do with also the laws of Shemitah, for example. So the second Kedusha produced laws of Shemitah, but only the area that was conquered. While the southern part of the Negev was not part of the Judean state in the Second Temple period. But Yerushalayim, the holiness established by Shlomo, is for the whole future. And why do I say that Kedushas HaMikdash Yerushalayim is different? Ne'ashchina, because of the divine presence. And Shechina never becomes nullified. Because it says in yesterday's parsha, I'm going to make your Mikdashim desolate. There's a hint here, more some say, well, the first bit, this was written in the Chumash, as what might happen. And it has happened. It's happened twice. That the Beit HaMikdash, and there's a hint here. It says Mikdash Shechem in the plural. But the prophecy hints at what actually has happened, unfortunately. That the place of the first Beit HaMikdash became completely desolate through Nebuchadnezzar. He burnt it up. And then, when the second one was built, there's a Nehemiah, it was also burnt up completely by Titus. It became a plowed field. But the sages say, Aval pi sheshemumim, even though they are desolate, bikdushatam, they still have their holiness. And then he goes further, gives another reason. Another reason is the first Beit HaMikdash was taken over by conquest of Eretz Israel. Beit HaMikdash was never conquered. Beit HaMikdash was bought by David HaMelech, the place, the Kesef Male. But the Eretz Israel is also, why is it Bichlal that we say the first conquest, there's two questions really. One question is the Kedusha of the Beit HaMikdash, which remains even when it's desolate. So that's why today, there's a reason why today you can't go on the Temple Mount, because it's Kadosh. It's got too high a level of holiness, which demands complete purity. So you're only allowed to go on the Temple Mount for security reasons. Chod Pikuach Nefesh is doing all the Torah. And if there's a danger, then the army has to take over. So they do. But otherwise, one's not allowed to go up. Because it's because we're all Tamei Meitim. Then the Rambam adds to this another important point. Why altogether do we say Kedushat Eretz Israel of Shlomo HaMelech? We should say for the Mikdash that remains forever. For the rest of Eretz Israel, it all became abolished when Nebuchadnezzar banished all the Jews from this holy land. The 10 tribes were lost. And even he banished everybody at the time. At the end of the end of the 70 years, Ezra and Nehemiah came and they rebuilt it. And we say that remains. That remains until today. That's why we have all these laws of Shemitah. Because that still applies. So the Rambam says why? When Ezra sanctified Lo Kitshat B'Kibosh, he also did not take it over with conquest. This is apparently here even in the Rambam. The Kedusha of Yerushalayim is shown by the fact that he was not allowed to conquer it. You shouldn't, just like the Beit HaMikdash itself, you shouldn't use the sword to cut things, and for the Mizbeah, can't use, then use metal. So, similarly also, the fact that it had to be conquered with a sword, which included also loss of life, that's not the highest level. But they did it through Kenyan. A Koiresh said, there's international permission, it was agreed upon by the empire that included this and basically inhabited world. He said, yeah, you go back to your land, build the Beit HaMikdash. She even sent physical help, material help. Therefore, kol makom shechziku bo ole bavel, nikdash nitkadesh bikdushin Ezra, tashniya, whom kurush hayom. Therefore, that remains forever. Even though after it was taken away from us, we couldn't use it anymore, but still called the chiyuv of shviyus and matzvos still applies. Because it was not taken by conquest. Why? Because, as one of you said, it's the simple translation of Yerushalayim is the city of peace. So,
I want you to change that. Isn't it the cities of peace? I understand now because it's a joining. It's a smichut.
Okay. But still, it's shalem and shalom are closely connected. Therefore, conquest is not peace. And that is why we've got to remove from our outlook upon the land of Israel the concept of conquering. Because we all, the conquering makes better, it's my strength, my power. It's all part of it. But we've got to try and work things out, just like Yaakov Avinu, when he's faced with Esau, he appeased them, you were ways of appeasement. But if they start attacking you, you prepare yourself for war as well. If they attack you, they don't let us live, they try to murder us, the law is, he comes to kill you, you've got to defend yourself. That's why we have the laws of defense certainly apply to the survival of Jews anywhere in the world. You find in areas in other countries that gangs get together to kill the Jews. So, in most places, or many places in any case, even today, Jewish communities, if appeal to the government to help, got the police to help, but they add a Jewish police as well. But places which are really endangered. And then you go out even on Shabbos. The same applies today. You have to do it. So, that's because you won't achieve peace by just giving in all the time to people who have murdered and want to continue to murder. But the essence of Eretz Israel, also one of the names of Hashem, is Shalom, and that is Yerushalayim. It will become the center of world peace, Bekarov. Yes. Any questions?
Come on. Hey, question. I don't know if this is folly or not, but is there such thing that exists that in the future Hashem would test the Jewish people? In other words, like there would be a test whereby it appears that Islam has had made a sacrifice to Hashem, and Hashem has accepted that.